All right. What we have coming around is the syllabus we'll be using for the remainder of this quarter. If anybody doesn't get one, or if there's not enough to go around, just let me know and I'll be glad to make more copies. I've got it on the overhead. We're not going to spend but just a second on it. But I did want to kind of start out this morning outlining how the quarter is going to flow. This is the second time we've done this class. These teachers taught it last time to the college age and young adult class. And I'm very confident that everyone will benefit greatly from this study of the minor prophets. We're going to survey each of the minor prophets. We're going to take and condense what could be a whole quarter of classes in some cases into a single class, or sometimes into two or three classes. So as you see, there will be different men teaching each of these classes. So the good news for you guys today is that this is the only time you'll have to put up with me. And then after today, we'll have different speakers for each class. What we wanted to do today was to somewhat introduce the book, to introduce the concept of the prophets, and we've already got some on this side, so I think you're good. I think we're good. Yeah. I'll take your spares if you've got them. All right. What we want to start out with this morning is to introduce the prophets. One of the things I think you probably have heard Bob say before in the past, and it's one of the illustrations that Bob's used that really brings the concepts of the prophets into clear vision for me anyway, and that is the prophets, when they would foresee something, and when they would see something that's going to happen in the future, they weren't able to see the details of all the little things that was going to happen that would lead up to the event that they were going to prophesy about. And Bob uses the concept many times of the mountaintops, and if you can't see the picture, there is a man that's off to the side over here, and he's looking out into the future, and there's two mountains, as it were, between him and the end time, or the day of the Lord, in this particular illustration, between him and the day of the Lord. There's two mountains. Now, what might happen between those two mountains, there's no way to know. You know, there's going to be events to happen between the near fulfillment and the far fulfillment. There's going to be things to happen in here. The prophet can't see those things. What the prophet is given is a glimpse into a certain day in time, a certain event that's going to happen out there in the future in many cases. So this illustration kind of brings to mind what is a prophet when they're foreseeing the future. There's many times when we read in the New Testament that says the thing, or we read of in the New Testament when it were the things that the prophets desired to look into, the things they desired to know. We think of how lucky the prophets were because they got to know everything, but many times there's many things that the prophets would have longed to have known they did not have the opportunity to know. So, as we begin, keep this vision in mind, or this illustration in mind as we're going through this study of the prophets. Now let's stop and set our mind back for a minute. The good thing about this class and this group of people is this is complete review to everyone. We all know the periods of Bible history, the ones that we've studied here as we've worked through, the things that are happening. We're going to talk a little bit more in just a minute about the covenants that led up to the period of time that we're going to be studying. But all the prophets, the minor prophets we're going to study this quarter, are going to fall into the periods of history between the divided kingdom, after God's kingdom has divided, Assyria has come in and taken the northern kingdom away, when we have Judah alone, and God is still preaching, he's still trying to woo his people back, and then Judah goes into captivity. And then many of the prophets we're going to study is during that time as well. And then the return from captivity. Obviously, there's no prophets to study in the years of silence, but that is the next step after the end of our study. The thing, Micah and Amos, that prophesies the years to come when there will be a famine of the Word of God. So these periods of history that's highlighted in red before us are the periods of time. And as you think about the history of what's happened to God's people, it is during the events in this period of time that we're going to see each of the prophets take place. Why study the Old Testament? Why study these minor prophets? Let's begin by asking that question. You know, it's kind of interesting. I've heard it from many people and many times. Why do we study the Old Testament? We're Christians. We're under the new law. We're under the new covenant. Why do we even spend our time? What value is it to a Christian to study the Old Testament or the Old Law? Well, by the end of this quarter, I'm confident that each and every one of us will realize and will take things away from us that will help us in our relationship with God. But the question is still a valid question. Why should we study this period of time? First, if you would, turn with me to Romans chapter 15. Let's look at a couple of verses. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. Whoever gets there first, please read that for us. Romans 15:4.
For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope.
All right. Now, and then, while that's still fresh on our mind, Trevor, if you would flip over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and read verse 11. Once again, these are passages that we all know well. Okay, so these Old Testament scriptures that we're going to be studying, a couple of things. One is they're written for our admonition. These are the things that we should know because we can keep from making the mistakes that they made that angered God and brought the punishment. But it's also for a hope. You know, in what way is it for a hope? And here we just got through studying the book of Revelations. And if there is a theme to the book of Revelation, somebody tell me what it is. Victory and trial?
Patience.
Well, guess what? If I had to say an overall theme to the study of the prophets, it's pretty much the same. It's victory. It may look bad. Things may look horrible to us right now, but there will be victory in the end. Be patient. Wait. But there's also the added, in Revelations, who is the victory? Who is the patience? Who is this for? Who's the comfort for? The Christians. In the Old Testament, these prophets that are coming, the patience, the victory, the consolation is for those who will obediently follow God and keep His commandments. So we're going to look at those covenants, those that will stay in that covenant relationship with Him. And that's a lot of the study this morning, is looking at the covenants that brought us up to this time. But this will help us when we think of God, His holiness, His justice that we fall before. You know, the God that they worshiped is the exact same God that we come before and worship today. So a lot of what we're going to learn during these next few months is His character. How He is, who He is when we come before Him. So the passages in the Old Testament, and exactly the ones of the minor prophets, are going to give us great comfort. But it's also going to help us in to know who it is, this God that we face every day. And we also know that all Scriptures, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, the passage we all know, all Scripture is inspired by God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction in righteousness, and for instructions in righteousness. And I don't think that passage was meant to begin. I think with the New Testament passages, I think that is for all Scripture that has been inspired. Okay. Well, these minor prophets, it's a collection of about 12 books. Begins with Hosea and ends with Malachi. It begins the period of years of silence. And we're going to study, I don't want to get too far into this because Greg will talk about this in the next class. But the overwhelming themes that are going to be over and over is holiness to the Lord, righteousness, justice, and mercy. With God's mercy will come justice. And it is a theme that comes through time and time again through this entire study. And we'll also see how God deals with the nations around. Who is a prophet? What is a prophet? How did God communicate with His people during this period of time? Well, if someone was to ask, what's a prophet? Somebody tell me. Give me your idea of what's a prophet. That's right. One who comes in who speaks for another. One who sees into the future. Called a seer in some cases. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Now, there was another one. If somebody would, everybody, turn over to Jeremiah chapter 20 and verse 9. specifically a prophet as a that we're going to be studying as a spokesman for God. But in some ways, the concept of Aaron, who was a spokesman for another, a spokesman for God and also through for Moses, falls into this category. And as soon as I can get there, Jeremiah chapter 20, specifically verse 9. Then I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name. But his word was in my heart like a burning fire shut up in my bones. I was weary of holding it back, and I could not. So here, this is Jeremiah talking. In the beginning of verse 9, what's Jeremiah wanting to do? What's he tired of? From those that know this passage. That's right. Exactly. I'm through with it. Every time I speak it, they're always on me. Everybody is against me. But what happened in the middle to the end of this verse? That's right. His words was in my heart like a burning fire, shut up in my bones. I was weary of holding it back, and I couldn't. No matter how hard I tried to hold back the message that was within, I could not do it, and I had to let it out. That's the last thing. It boils up like a fountain. Did any of the prophets, thinking about what the situation Jeremiah was in, did any of these prophets do it for their own well-being? Did they do it for their own pleasure? Did they enjoy going into the city and pronouncing woes upon the city? No. No. In many cases, they hurt for the people that they were prophesying to. But they did it because they had a message. And even if they didn't like the message they had and the message that they needed to deliver, it boiled within them, as Jeremiah says, and he could no longer hold it back. Exactly. Exactly. And in some of the prophets, it was taken into captivity. They heard even with the people. So for the people, with the people, and as you say, by the people. The very people that they were speaking to. Other comments. Excellent comment. Other comments or questions? Now, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Let's talk for just a moment about the different ways that God spoke with His people. We've talked about, and the whole quarter is going to be about the prophets. But the prophets isn't the only way that God communicated with His people and let them know what to do to follow Him. What about Moses? He was the lawgiver. So the first thing we talk about, we've got the patriarchs before, that they would speak to the father. The father knew how to please God, and the father was in charge of his family or his household to ensure that his household pleased God. And then we had Moses, the lawgiver. He was given the law and then in turn given it back to the people. What was the priest role? Once we start talking about the covenant, what was the priest role in the covenant? Exactly. The high priest, as Chris said, would go in and talk to God. And then what was... Everybody turn over to Leviticus chapter 10. We're going to be doing a lot of turning around today. That's the good thing about an introduction and an overview is we'll be all over the place. But that's right. They offered the sacrifices. They communed with God. They interceded for the people. And then specifically in verses 8 through 11 of Leviticus chapter 10, I'll read it so that everyone can hear. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, "Do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meetings, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever through your generations, that you may distinguish between holy and unholy, and between clean and unclean, and that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them by the hands of Moses." So the law was handed down, given to Moses. Moses gave the law out. But then the priest had a role as well. First, they were to be sober. They were not to drink wine or intoxicating drink because they were to know the law. And once they knew the law, they were supposed to be able to take and apply that law. To know, to discern between what's clean, what's unclean, what's holy, what's unholy. And then as you say, they've got to turn, teach the people. That's what they were commanded to do. They were to hear it. They were to be able to discern between right and wrong and then teach it to the people. Also, at different times, there was elders, judges, wise men, or counselors. And if you think during the time of the judges, what were they commanded to do? What was their relationship? And we could even add patriarchs in there.
And to apply the law.
Exactly. They were to receive it, to take it, to internalize it, to teach it. And then with the psalmist and the poets. 2 Samuel chapter 23 speaks of these, mainly just by name. 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 1. Probably shouldn't have taken the time to turn over here, but once again, they're mentioned here as, now these are the last words of David, thus David, the son of Jesse, thus says the man raised up on high, the anointed of God of Jacob, the sweet psalmist of Israel. This is another group, the wise men or the psalmist, and we put people like Solomon, we put people like David the psalmist, the other psalmists in there, and what did they add? We talk, you know, in communicating God's word. Think about the Old Testament. Think about God's people. What would be missing without Psalms like 119? Think about what they would be missing without the Psalms, without the Proverbs, the wise sayings of God that was delivered through Solomon or through David. Think about the holes. You know, not that they didn't have the law, but not that they couldn't understand the law through the priests and through all these other people, but look at the entire picture where God is given to the children of Israel to know Him. Does any one of the children of Israel, we're going to add the prophets in a minute, but does any one of the children of Israel have an excuse for not knowing God? They failed at this. But God, from the very beginning, and that's really what we're going to start looking at from here on through the rest of the class, is from the very beginning, God had it set up so that everyone would know how to please Him, how to obey Him, and had a mechanism to know what His law was. Because did everyone have access? Did everyone, like we have a Bible at home, did all the children of Israel have a scroll at their house with the Ten Commandments on it? No. But they had heard it. It was to be repeated every 7 years. Hopefully we'll have time to see in a minute. They were to have it repeated to them every 7 years so that they would know it. They would internalize it. So God's desire from the very beginning of time was for the people to know Him and to be able to speak His word. Now let's turn our attention to the prophets. What are some different names that you've heard of the prophets? And I'm not just talking about the minor prophets now, but just the word prophets and prophets in general as they were through the Old Testament. First, what are some different things they were called? The messengers of God. Excellent. With that, Brother Bedingfield, or someone, if you don't mind, read Isaiah chapter 42 and verse 19. Someone who would like to turn there. Read Isaiah chapter 42, verse 19. And then whoever's there first, read it. All right. He's a messenger. He's a servant. What else? What other words? We could talk about the servant in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 36, or 1 Chronicles chapter 6 and verse 9. It says something very similar to what Isaiah does here. A servant of God, a messenger of God, one who's gone out to do His bidding or to do God's work. Anything else that you remember a prophet being called by? Man of God. Can you give us an example? Exactly. And the man of God gave him instructions that was false instructions, but he was referred to as a man of God. When Saul was out looking for his father's donkeys in the fields, He went, and they were about to turn back because he said, our fathers are now going to be scared about where we are. And he said, but the servant said, there's a man of God in this city. And they went in and they asked and was foretold where he would be. And that word foretelling, does anybody remember them being referred to as seers? They could see into the future. They were seers. So these, but once again, they all kind of come back to those definitions we looked at what a prophet was. He's one who sees or sees into the future. He announces something that's going to happen in the future. And he can't contain the message. And there's another important one, especially as we start talking about this next quarter. Ezekiel chapter 3. If you don't mind, Matt, read Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 17. And Tony, if you don't mind, flip over to chapter 33 and verse 7. Go ahead, Matt. Okay, excellent. Tony, chapter 33, verse 7.
So you, son of man, have made a watchman for the house of Israel. Whenever you hear a word from my mouth, you shall give them a warning from me.
Okay, so what are these two passages teaching? What's a watchman? One sits on a wall, out watching. But what else does a watchman do?
Warns.
Exactly, warns. The enemy is coming. The enemy is coming. The enemy is coming. Go, take cover, prepare. So once again, these prophets we're going to talk about, another one of their major roles is to be that of a watchman, to sit out and to watch for those things coming and to warn the people how to avoid such a thing. Now, we've already talked about this for just a little bit, but a lot of times, you know, we think about the prophets. And we think about the importance of their role. But when you look in things like Isaiah chapter 6, and you first see Isaiah, he's before the throne seat of God in chapter 6, and he says, God says, I need someone to go out and speak. What's for Isaiah's first reaction when he says, I need someone to go out and speak? I am a man of unclean lips. I'm undone. I'm a man of unclean lips. What does God do about that? He cleanses him. An angel comes and takes a hot amber, touches his lips, and he says, now they're cleansed. And then he goes on to talk about his need. Whom shall I send? Verse 8. And who will go for us? And what was Isaiah's reply in verse 8? Here am I, send me. Now, think about the excitement of that. All right, I've got an important job to go out and do. Here I am, send me. And then he said, go and tell the people. Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and the ears heavy and shut their eyes that they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and return and be healed. And then he says, Lord. I mean, does that sound like a really positive message? Go out and preach to them until they won't listen anymore. And when they won't listen, preach a little more. And then what's Isaiah's question? How long do I have to do this? We went from, hey, look what an important mission, to, oh boy, how long? How long do I have to do this? Verse 11, until the cities are laid waste and without inhabitation, and the houses are without a man, the land is utterly destroyed, the Lord has removed men far away and forsaken places, and many of the midst of the land, and yet a tent will be in it, and return and be for the consuming. And he goes on to talk about a terrible tree, a stump, and the holy seed shall be in its stump. So, a very important prophecy. I'm not belittling it a prophecy, but once again, how long shall I do this? Until the city is no more. You know, does that give you a glowing optimism about your job if you're a prophet? You want to hear, well, you're going to do it until they repent and come back to God. But what does he hear? Until the city's destroyed. So, once again, these prophets, they have a very major goal in front of them. They have a very hard task in front of them to do. And there are many kinds of prophets. There are the oral prophets. Examples are like Elijah and Elisha. And then there's Nathan, who went into David. So over and over throughout, when we start talking about the minor and the major prophets, Daniel, Ezekiel, and then Hosea, the ones we're going to study this quarter, they're not all of the prophets that happen in the Old Testament. They're the ones that are literary prophets. They're the ones that left writings behind that we can read and study and learn more about history that happened to God's people, and also a little bit more about God's view of His people. But once again, there's more to it than that. So let's go. At this point, let's spend the rest of our time that we have this morning, and let's talk about God's covenants with His people. Like I said, Greg is going to pick up and speak specifically about what these prophets, the times that they're in, what they're dealing with, and he's going to introduce the prophets we're going to study, and he's going to give us some really great things to keep in our minds as we go through the survey of each of the prophets. But what I want to begin and end the rest of the class with this morning is, what was God's desire from the beginning? Before the flood, Adam and Eve in the garden, what was God's desire? What did He want at that time? Obedience. What else? He wanted a relationship with His people. He came down and in the cool of the afternoon, He walked amongst them. We learned this, not in a positive way, but we learned this in a negative way because they were hiding after they had sinned. But He come down to be among them. So that's not a high and lofty God that wanted nothing to do with His creation. He created people, He created the world to have a relationship, to be their God and for them to be His people. So we see He wanted obedience and He wanted a relationship. Now, their obedience was not that hard. I mean, you know, we can say one command. Now, it was not, you know, the temptation still lied for them with the one command to obey, as it does to all other people with all the commands to obey. But one command, this one tree. And if they would have left that one tree alone, they could have lived in bliss forevermore. But they didn't. And with sin came consequence. But let's look. What about after that time? After the sin, they were driven out of the garden. Leading up to the period of time of the flood, was the people, would you call the people righteous or unrighteous at that time? Very much unrighteous at this point in time. And God said, I'm going to destroy them with a flood. But He noticed one man by the name of Noah, that we know the story well. He noticed Noah. He was a righteous man, a man after His own heart. He took him and separated him out from this destruction and set up a covenant or a relationship with him. And then it was after this, and we go through several thousand years, but we come to Abraham. What was the promises? To get our mind, and as we're getting ready for the study of the prophets, what was the promises God made to Abraham? Genesis what? First. I heard it over here very quietly, but chapter 12. Where? Verses. What verses? Now, see, I'm standing in Bob's spot today, so I've got to do the flashlight questions. Genesis chapter 12, verses what? 2 and 3, and then again in verse 7. Now, what were those promises? He made three great promises to Abraham. The land. I will give you this land. The land that he's on Shechem. He's looking out over the land of Canaan. I'll give you this land. Through your seed, what? All nations will be blessed, as we had right here. And what was the third one? The great nation. Excellent. The great nation. And I think great nation, if we go back to our picture there, I think great nation is one that's a perfect example of, there was a near fulfillment in Israel of that great nation that was to come. But I believe that His spiritual kingdom was the end fulfillment of that great nation, that as the Hebrew writer points out, that through faith we're all a part of Abraham, through his faith. But still, to be a great nation before God. Now, if we wanted to turn and to look at the covenant that God made with them, where would we go? I'm hearing whispers. I've got a mic. You don't have the luxury of a mic. But if you wanted to know the relationship, the first part where the commandment of God, where He began His covenant with God's people, His people, where would I go? To Mount Sinai. Excellent. Mount Sinai, Exodus 19 and 20. Now, Bob just preached on this, but what is, if you had to sum up the covenant in one word or in a phrase, what would it be? Fear God and keep His commandments. Excellent. Anybody got anything else? I am holy, you be holy too. The actual, if somebody had to tell me what the theme of Leviticus was, I would say, be holy for I am holy. Anything else? I will be your God if you will be my people. Look at verses 5 and 6 of Exodus 19. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession from amongst the people, and from all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. And these are the words which thou shalt speak to the children of Israel. Now there are some very special things that are said there. And this is the foundation. First, if you'll indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant or keep my commandments, you'll be my own special possession. Think about the pleasure that would come through those simple words. You'll be my special, you know, I'll hold you in my hand as a precious possession. A kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Going back to what Matt said. Be holy for I am holy. That was his original desire. He wanted people to be holy for he was holy. He wanted a kingdom of priests. He wanted a special nation, a possession. And once again, going back to the Garden of Eden, it's still about a relationship. He wants a relationship with his people. He wants to be their God and he wants them to be his people. Now, there in Exodus chapter 19 and down in verse 8, what was the people's reply? All that the Lord has said we will do. So, once again, just like with the prophets, we start off with an amazing picture. I will be your God. If you'll keep my commandments, I'll be your God. I will protect you. And they start off, all that you've said we will do. All that the Lord has said we will do. So it starts off as an amazing relationship. And then a few chapters over in Exodus chapter 34. Now they've had time to fail by this time. Because what happens in Exodus chapter 32? Golden calf. See, all those years of chapter content with you paid off. But in chapter 32, they've already failed with the golden calf. And then by chapter 34, they're to the point they're ready to renew that covenant. They've sinned against God. And they're ready to renew the covenant. Beginning in verse 10, we don't have time to read all this, but I'm going to skip down. Beginning in verse 10 says, behold, I make a covenant before you and all the people, and do marvelous such that has not been seen in all the earth, nor all the nations. Verse 11, observe what I've commanded you this day. Behold, I'm driving from before you the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Take heed yourself, verse 12, take heed yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land that you are going, that they will be a snare in your midst. But you shall destroy their altars, break down their sacred pillars, and cut down their wooden images. For you shall worship no god, for the Lord your God, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. So, he gives them three warnings here. They failed, and what did they fail at? Idolatry. They had made the golden calf. They had worshipped the golden calf. Moses has been gone for a long time. Build us something that we may worship. Now, so the first thing he says is idolatry shall be no more. Then what does he say? What does he warn them about the peoples? He's just going to give them the land. He's going to give them the land, the Hittites, the Perizzites, all of the peoples, the Jebusites, all of the peoples that... As the Amorites, he said to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, the iniquity of the Amorites are not yet full. They're full. Their iniquity is full. He's about to give them the land. But what does he say about the people? There'll be a snare to you. That's right. Don't make a covenant. Don't have anything to do with them. Destroy them. Put them away. Why would they be a snare? That's right. This going back to this idolatry where they had failed. Don't do it. Because they will pull you back into idolatry, and then what would that idolatry do? It would break your covenant with me, and instead of being my special possession, instead of doing great things, like he said in verse 10, I will do, behold, I will, you will see marvelous things, and I'll do marvelous things that's like it's never been done in all the earth before. Instead of those, you'll have the curses that may come. So if you obey my voice and keep my commandments, I will bless you. Now, for a few minutes now, let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 28. He set everything up. If you'll obey me, you'll keep my commandments, I will bless you. Deuteronomy chapter 28 kind of gives us an idea. And once again, I wish we had time to read. I wish we had a couple of classes and time to read this. But in Deuteronomy 28, we have the blessings that they will give if they obey him. And for time's sake, I'm going to stop and pause from the blessing and tell you what happens picking up in verse 15 and going down with the curses. So, picking up in chapter 28, if you diligently obey my voice, the voice of the Lord, and observe carefully all his commandments which I command you this day, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you have obeyed the voice of the Lord your God. So nothing they're going to do. They're going to come upon them and overtake them. Blessed shall you be in the city and blessed shall you be in the country. Well, guess what? If they disobey, picking up in about verse 16, what do you think the curse is going to be? Cursed you will be in the city and cursed you will be in the country. So the same blessing, for the same blessing, there is a curse. Verse 4, blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, the increase of your herd, the increase of your cattle, and the offspring of your flock. Guess what? If they disobey, in everything, their homes, their families, their cattle, everything that he says, if you obey me, I'll bless you, picking up in verse 20 and following, or I'm sorry, 18 and through 19, cursed. In every one of those same categories, for every blessing, there was a curse. Your baskets, verse 5, your baskets, your kneading bowls, and shall be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will cause your enemies to rise against you, to be defeated before your face. They shall come against you one way, and flee before you seven ways. Now think about that statement. God, the one who created the world, that has control of everything, has just looked at you as a people and said, your enemies are going to come up against you, and they're going to come before you one way, but because I'm your God, and if you obey me, how are they going to go out? They're going to scatter. Now, the fearful side of that, if you don't obey me, taking what we've heard and the pattern that we've already been talking about, their disobedience, what's going to happen? Their enemy is going to come before them how many ways? One way. And then what's Israel going to do? Scatter seven. So that same blessing for obedience is an absolute curse. I will protect you. I won't protect you. And without God, how could they stand against? What did they say when the spies went in to spy out the land that they were going to take? How did they stand before these people? It's grasshoppers. They were grasshoppers in the land. Was there any way they could physically go in and take these people? No. But with God, they could do it. And God wanted them to remember that. And he said, if you stay with me and if you obey me, you'll go in and they'll be defeated and they'll flee from you. But if you leave me, they will come in and you will flee from them. And he continues with this. You'll have to have larger storehouses to store all the blessings I will give you. The Lord, verse 9, the Lord will establish you as a holy people just as he has sworn to you. And if you will keep the commandments of the Lord and walk in his ways. And then verse 10, I think, is key. Then all the people of the earth shall see you and called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. And we can talk about, we can see this, you know, that seeing into the future, Rahab the harlot, what did she see as they were about to take Jericho? Did people of Jericho know about these people that was on the other side? Very much so. Had they heard what God had done, what their God had done for them? Very much so. They knew what had happened at the Red Sea. They knew what had happened as the others had come against them in the land of Moab and Edom. And she's like, hey, what can I do to get on your side? I want to be on the side of your God. That is direct fulfillment of verse 10. If you will stay with me, these people will be scared of you and they will fall before you. And once again, though, it goes down after verse 23, 24 in that area and gives the absolute opposite of these things. So, we've seen what God said he would do if they would obey. Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy 28, what he would do if they disobeyed, the curses that would come in those same passages, Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Someone who has headings in their text, someone tell me, how many verses in chapter 28 of Deuteronomy does God spend on the blessings that'll come? Verses 1 through what? 1 through 14. And then for how long does he go on the cursing that would happen if they disobey? The rest of the chapter, 14 through 68. Does God know and understand that His people has to be warned? They have to know, they have to understand? Yeah, we need more admonition in the sense of what not to do than what to do. And then, as we're ending up this morning, how did God want, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, how did He want His Word to be spread? We've already talked about the priest. The priest had an important role, and there's someone else that had an important role in the spreading of His Word, Deuteronomy chapter 5. Parents to children. Exactly. Not only did He want them to know the Word, but He wanted it to be all-encompassing to them, didn't He? He wanted it to be before them when they arose in the morning and when they went to bed at night, when they were sitting at the table. He wanted it written on their doorposts, on lintels, on their foreheads. He wanted the Word to be everywhere and to encompass them in all that they did. And if they would have done this, would they have been right in the sight of God? Yes. Is this, sadly though, is this how it plays out when you look at the periods? No. And that's what the prophets are about. The prophets are going to begin, Tim is going to talk in Micah about the things that they were doing and where they had gotten to the point the priests were saying, peace, peace, while they chewed on the flesh of the people. They would cry out, peace, peace, everything's fine, everything's lovely, while the priests were chewing on them. You know, it's kind of hard for you to tell me everything is fine and lovely while you're eating my hand or while you're biting my hand. That is the point where it got to. And these very able men are going to take my place, thankfully, and take us through that study. Is there any questions or comments before we dismiss this class? Excellent. Thank you for your time and thank you for your attention this morning. Did anybody not get an outline? Anybody need one?